From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm Jackson.
I'm from the Campbell area.
Hayward.
Coming up, we explore how the Bay Area's Filipino community is voting this year.
There's a spike in the number of Filipinos who identify more with the Republican Party this time.
Then we visit the virtual world to see what gets teenagers interested in the elections.
They're going to be taxpayers, and if they don't understand how it works, they're going to be totally unable to engage their lives as citizens.
And we'll go back to a time when campaigns were much more musical. There's a debate tonight, and we'll have you ready to sing today on Cross Currents. Stay tuned. In a little less than an hour is the second presidential debate. We'll talk more about that later in the show. But for now, you should know that the debate this time is town hall style, which means questions will be coming from voters, not a moderator. To start today's show, we continue our series in partnership with New America Media, delving into the issues that California's ethnic voters care most about this year. The Pew Research Center says Asian Pacific Islander Americans are now the fastest growing ethnic and immigrant group in the United States. Asian Americans as a whole also tend to be the most educated and prosperous. Almost half have college degrees. Here in California, that's a lot of educated Asians. The U.S. Census Bureau estimates that 450,000 of the country's more than 3 million Filipinos live in the Greater Bay Area. Traditionally, Filipinos have leaned towards the Democratic Party, but more recently, they're tending to vote conservatively. We heard some evidence of that recently when KALW's RTM's Conhoves went to watch the first presidential debate with a group of local Republicans. Filipina businesswoman Nympha Gamez says she's a Romney supporter.
President Obama seems vague in his ideas. He keeps saying Romney doesn't give details, but actually he was talking in details, you know?
Joining me to discuss what the Filipino vote should mean to the candidates is Henny Espinoza, senior reporter for Balitang America on the Filipino Channel.
In the past, the first generation of Filipinos were connected to their homeland, to the Philippines, and to the issues back home. But now, with the economic crisis and how they've been affected, they feel that their votes count more. So they are more inclined to vote. So there's more interest in voting. More Filipinos are becoming naturalized. They're becoming U.S. citizens, so they can actually practice their right to vote. They're also more informed with issues. They are, you know, especially with their kids are more engaged politically, and so the children influence the first generation, their parents, to be more connected to political issues in America. So they know the candidates better. They know President Obama more, of course, the Republican Party. And so they're more informed in their decision to vote. They're more confident in voting. And they're also more excited because, especially here in California, we have three Filipinos that are running for state assembly. And that's historic. That's never happened before. We've never had a Filipino in state assembly. And so Filipinos are really excited here, especially in the state, to vote.
Right. And those are Rob Bonta for District 18,
yes,
Jennifer
Rob
Ong.
Bonta.
Jennifer Ong is running where I live in Union District 20, which includes my hometown of Union City, large
yes,
Filipino. Large Filipino community there, and in Daly
yes.
City, which is represented
yes.
by Chris Mateo, and he's challenging Fiona Ma. Very
yeah, so
interesting.
Filipinos are very excited to see all three are actually doing well, and they have a lot of community support, not just from the Filipino community, but actually in mainstream and in other immigrant communities. So you see that even as there are more Filipinos interested in voting, there are actually more Filipinos interested in running for office.
Right. If the population is more engaged, towards what party does it lean? And has that changed over the years?
Well, historically, Filipinos are more inclined to vote for the Democratic Party. But there's a spike in the number of Filipinos who identify more with the Republican Party this time. They're more inclined to vote for Romney over Obama. And I've spoken with some of the Filipino-American voters recently. The reason why they're more inclined to vote for Romney this time around is because of what they've been through the last 4 years. They had high hopes in 2008 that things would get better. But a lot of them, like the couple that I spoke with recently, lost their homes, lost their jobs. And they asked this question, are we better off now than we were in 2008? And the answer for them is no. They're suffering more, they feel, and, you know, partly they blame it on President Obama. And so they feel that it's time for a change. But I've spoken with other community leaders as well who feel that, you know, that the community should also cut Obama some slack, you know, give him a little bit of breathing room because he's been through a lot. He's opened up a lot of programs that actually help a lot of people in the housing area, in the job sector. They feel he's doing his best. So it's mixed reactions, really, but you can see at least that there is a discussion, there is a debate, there's more interest to talk about who they feel will really address their concerns.
What other issues is the Filipino community closely following? For example, is immigration an issue?
Yeah, definitely immigration, yeah. It's immigration has always been a pressing concern for Filipinos. And you'd be surprised, it's also mixed reactions. And, you know, a lot of Filipinos believe that there should be immigration reform. They support the Federal Dream Act as well as the California Dream Act. And, you know, even with President Obama's deferred action policy, they feel that the young people, you know, deserve to finish school here, to work legally here. They're excited, especially for the young kids who are benefiting from the deferred action policy. I've just spoken with them recently. They're excited to look for jobs. A lot of them can now take the boards for nursing because in the past they couldn't because they have no social security. So they're excited and they feel that whoever the next president should be able to pass comprehensive immigration reform, not just for the undocumented students, but for the rest of their family members who may also be undocumented. You know, you can really see that Filipinos are more politically empowered. I think that's the key word, the empowerment part, because, you know, as immigrants, they may not have felt that their votes would count in the past, but now they really feel that the immigrant vote does count, and they have a voice in this country, and that's something that we're truly, truly excited about this presidential election.
That's Henny Espinosa, senior reporter for Balitang America on the Filipino channel. Every Tuesday till Election Day, we'll be talking to journalists from the ethnic media to tell us how their audiences are voting this year. It's a partnership with New America Media. And if you identify with one of the Bay Area's many ethnic communities, we want to hear from you. What's most important to you this election season? Leave a message on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Nearly a fifth of the United States electorate is made up of young voters. That's a big voting block for any candidate. And as of early October, 14% of them are still undecided. A recent Pew study says voter registration among young people is on the decline. Youth Radio's Malachi Seegers explores some efforts to turn that around by meeting young people where they are, online.
Do you support the Patriot Act? What is the Patriot Act? Sounds familiar.
Jalen Burns is completing an online election quiz called isidewith.com. It was designed as a tool to engage people in politics by helping them identify what issues are important to them. The site matches you up with a candidate that aligns with your political views. 18-year-old Kayla Say wasn't surprised by her political match.
It does kind of make me want to vote more for Obama, but at the same time, I don't always agree with every single issue.
Say will be eligible to vote for the first time this November, but she, like many other young voters, hasn't made up her mind about voting at all. Are young people disengaging from politics for good? Taylor Peck, founder of iSideWith.com, says no.
Teenagers will tell you that that they're not really interested in politics and they don't really align with anybody. We actually think they will be, and we'll help remind them which candidates and issues are important to them if they take our quiz.
Researchers say young people do have the drive to be political, just not in traditional ways.
Many young people really respond well when they're not just being asked to do something in support of a candidate, but are asked what they think or are given opportunities to circulate their perspectives throughout their networks.
That's Joseph Kahn, co-author of the Youth Participatory Politics Research Project that was released this July. His study found that young people use social media to discuss politics frequently. And this research seems to be catching on. MTV is piloting an online election game called The Power of 12, modeled after fantasy football. But instead of choosing your dream team of NFL players, you choose a team of politicians who gain or lose points based on what they do in real life, forcing players to keep track of political news. But ultimately, it comes down to whether or not young people actually go to the polls like they did 4 years ago. Trying to start that momentum are educators, like James Richter. He's an American government teacher at Skyline High School in Oakland, California.
It's partly our job to get them to buy into the idea that it's worth knowing these things because they're going to be taxpayers. Eventually, they're going to have to be running things. And if they don't understand how it works, they're going to be totally unable to engage their lives as citizens.
Richter teaches mainly seniors, like Gregory Belvin, who's 18, but failed to register for the California primaries.
I didn't put in the legwork like I needed to. I had the resources and everything, but being ridiculous, it just didn't work out.
His classmate, Angela Tang, who did register to vote, found the process confusing.
It's just really blurry, so I think schools or wherever you register to vote should be more intentional in telling you the steps to take afterwards.
The two of them graduated this past spring from Skyline High and will be eligible to vote in the first presidential election in November. Both of them wish schools did more to teach the nuts and bolts of getting involved in politics. But maybe online applications can start to connect the dots and bridge the gap between learning about government in school and actually getting to the polls. So what happens when an election quiz matches you up with someone you've never heard of? That was the case for Jalen Burns.
So the sites matched me up with Jill Stein because we got the most issues in common. 87% compatible. I don't know who Jill Stein is.
Is 87% compatible enough to make a young person want to do further research? Who knows? At least Jalen now has a new candidate to explore. And maybe more young people will do the same. For Cross Currents, I'm Malachi Seegers.
That story was produced by Youth Radio. If you're someone who's never voted before, we want to know what you'll be voting on or why you won't vote. Join the discussion on our Facebook page, KALW News. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. In about 45 minutes, President Barack Obama will debate challenger Mitt Romney for the second time. The first debate ranged from the argumentative.
It's math. It's arithmetic.
I'm not in favor of a $5 trillion tax cut. That's not my plan.
To the absolutely absurd.
I love Big Bird. I actually like you, too.
I just want to wish, sweetie, you happy anniversary and let you know that a year from now, we will not be celebrating it in front of 40 million people.
Then last week, the vice presidential candidates got their chance.
When we look weak, our adversaries are much more willing to test us. They're more brazen in their attacks, and our allies are less willing to
trust
us.
With all due respect, that's a bunch of malarkey.
Local comedian Will Durst is gearing up to watch tonight's debate and brings us these thoughts on what's happened so far.
Hey guys, Will Durst here, using a third towel to wipe down from the vice presidential wrestling match, debate. The sweat coming off both the bottom names of the campaign bumper stickers was so thick on the Danville, Kentucky stage, it shot right through television screens onto we viewers at home. In this highly anticipated undercard bout, Joe Biden and Paul Ryan took off the gloves and went at each other with straight policy jabs and sweeping rhetorical hooks for 90 minutes. No knockdowns were recorded, but most ringside judges gave the decision to Biden for stopping his own party's bleeding and blocking his opponent's momentum. Kudos were also tossed Martha Raddatz's way, who refereed the event with a command and aplomb that had veteran observers refer to her as the anti-Jim Lehrer. Paul Ryan's intensive training paid off, and he punched and counterpunched all evening while smiling so hard you could almost hear the enamel cracking inside his mouth. Meanwhile, Joe Biden had to physically restrain himself from dismantling the desk and chewing it into pieces. Like a hyper chihuahua finally let out after a long weekend cooped in the closet. Apparently, the former senator from Delaware had downed a couple of bottles of very caffeinated Ensure. Both Catholic fighters, the 69-year-old vice president and the 42-year-old Wisconsin congressman, danced around the ring when the question of abortion was raised and a no-smirking zone was briefly established. And not a single word about Big Bird. Although it was an entertaining, if not informative, match, and the general consensus is, if the two combatants promised to wear spandex next time around, we could easily sell a rematch on pay-per-view.
Wilder's views are his own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KALW News. His show, Elect to Laugh, plays at the Marsh Theater in San Francisco till Election Day. Details are at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. From now until Election Day, every part of the campaign machine will be working to get our attention.
Hello, Ohio! So I'm happy to introduce a son of Detroit, Kid Rock.
Barack Obama and Mitt Romney both use pop stars to help their campaigns, but those artists don't usually write music just for them. Things would have been different, musically speaking, if they'd been running prior to the early 1900s. Back then, all sorts of songs were written especially for candidates and their causes, as KALW's Stephen Short tells us.
The current exhibit at the Society of California Pioneers is called Singing the Golden State. It's about the music of California, much of it from the time before recordings existed, when nearly all music was performed live. One section features a type of music not often heard these days, songs composed exclusively for California politics. James Keller is the exhibit's curator.
Anybody who ran for office in the old days had a campaign song, and often they had more than one campaign song. One of them is this fascinating song, Be Good to California, Mr. Wilson, California Was Good to You. Now, there's a mouthful of a title.
Keller is standing over an old record player known at the time as a talking machine. Many of these campaign songs were written for rallies and only exist today on sheet music. So hearing a period recording is a rare event.
We crank up the talking machine. That should be enough. And then we take off the brake, and it's rotating.
The Mr. Wilson in question here is President Woodrow Wilson. The song was written in 1916, 4 years before women could vote nationally. But women in California got the vote starting in 1912.
And they voted for Woodrow Wilson. And so what they're doing in this song is they're berating him a little bit on the fact that in the 4 years that have gone by in his first term, he still has not gotten national suffrage for women. And they're reminding him that he owes them. And a few years later, in fact, Woodrow Wilson did see it through, and we got the amendment that gave universal suffrage to women.
Well, now, where would this be played or sung?
Oh, well, that's a good question. Obviously, it was a popular song. It was put out by a major New York publisher, and it had rather famous authors, and so it was going to get some mileage.
The radio hadn't come along yet.
No, we're in the pre-radio era here. Now, obviously, it got some play on records. I know of one place where I'm almost certain that it was performed, because I ran across a newspaper clipping that detailed the suffragettes who were going literally to the doors of the White House.
That newspaper clipping, Keller says, reports that those female demonstrators spent part of their time singing songs about their cause.
And when I read this, I thought, well, I know one of the songs that they surely sang is Be Good to California, Mr. Wilson, because I'll bet the California contingent of suffragettes were very active singing that song.
Well, this is a whole lot more creative than saying, what do we want? Votes. When do we want them? Now, which is about all you get from demonstrations today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they actually articulated very specific things in some of these campaign songs. I mean, they really put forward planks through many verses. They'll sing about the things that they want.
Keller has selected a couple of other policy-oriented songs for the exhibit. No recordings exist, just the written music.
One is from Upton Sinclair, who you know, the famous author, but he ran for governor of California at one point on the EPIC program. EPIC was his slogan, E-P-I-C, End Poverty in California, which is always a good idea, but it was especially resonant in the Depression when he was running for governor unsuccessfully. But he made a good run at it.
This is a song that could be picked up by a candidate today. The lyrics, sung to a lively march tempo, include...
End poverty in California and bring happiness to forgotten men. End poverty in California and prosperity will come again. It's the battle cry of the real democracy, and it means the end of all hypocrisy. End poverty in California, and Upton Sinclair will show the way.
And then we have a campaign song also from the Prohibition Party, which rarely won very many seats, but this was a campaign song of theirs called We'll Keep California Dry, which, again, they did not manage to do, but was sung a great deal because the song comes up a fair amount. I've run across many copies of it.
We are in this conflict for our children, our homes, friends, and state so dear. With our vision cleared, we behold the day that is dawning ever far and near.
And one of the interesting things about that song is that they kept a page blank in it so that all the different Prohibition Party candidates could fill that page by printing something about themselves or run their own portrait or whatever points they wanted to make in their campaigns.
The days of going down to the old sheet music store to find a campaign song are long gone. Now supporters of a candidate or cause can listen while others sing to them. Or they can watch while singing along on YouTube and simultaneously sharing their views with other interested voters.
Thank you for blessing me and the rest of the city with Mayor Ed Lee. Ed Lee.
We are 99. Oh, we are the 99. You may be the other 1%, but we are the 99.
Whether it's a song endorsing San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee or an Occupy chant for the 99%, one aspect of campaign songs remains unchanged. They still have to deliver the message. In San Francisco, I'm Stephen Short for Crosscurrents.
James Keller will give a talk about campaign songs in elections this coming Thursday, October 18th, at the Society of California Pioneers Museum and Library. Find all the details at KALW.org.
You may be the other 1%, but we are the 99.
You've been listening to Crosscurrents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moo, Leela Day, RTM's Konohovs, Nina Morente, Mary Reese, Stephen Short, RJ Sloan, Eva Sansin, and Anna Sterling. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. Find them online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll meet two men undertaking a remarkable journey.
Well, it's not as if we've put off death forever, but at least it may be put on hold for a little bit longer than we had anticipated, which is, of course, good news because I rather like being alive.
The story of a couple coping with mortality. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. You're listening to the music of Ricardo Scales. You can hear him tomorrow at the Top of the Mark Lounge off Union Square at 6:30 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.